叫顺德西风摩亚特多米东萨风加格特贝特穆蒂亚摩斯塔尼萨普鲁塔尼那扎隆德沙巴斯蒂特那丘摩斯塔尼布塔尼不舍米加格米舍江Buddha Srinna Buddha Stavumat Ma Buddha Bhavana. The whole universe is pervaded by one infinite light. All the multitudinous forms of existence live, move and have their being in the medium of the One. May we live in harmony with that infinite light.Page 8, number 16. Peace, freedom, and love. The reality is unfettered vision.Effortless will, desireless action. God is beyond all distinction and opposition. God is the one undivided basis of all differentiation. God is the delight of diversified creation. We are in essence.Interrelated members of an organic whole. May we achieve peace in all our relations. May we realize freedom in all our thoughts. May we express love in all our actions. Om Shanti, Shanti.God is the peace that passes the understanding. I am going to talk this morning on how to exist. In other words, the problem of existence.In our present age, for various reasons, the problem of existence has come to the foreground. For various reasons. First of all, of course, there is that obvious reason that we live in the atomic age. Due to tremendous technological development, the big powers of the worldhave devised the ability to overkill, that is to say, to kill the human race many times over. And that is a constant danger and fear with which we live today, on account of which what is called in existentialist philosophy, contingency of life,has come to the front of our consciousness. Now, contingency of life, that is the philosophical word, which means absolute uncertainty of life, insecurity. We never know, we can never tell, you know, when what is going to happen. Always you, as it were, hold your life in the palm of your hand, or your life is rather held in the palm of an unknown force.Over which you have no control. So that has produced this sense of contingency, absolute insecurity of existence. See, Mr. Jones is coming home from office on the highway. Suddenly he is involved in a fatal accident. He never comes home. So that is the contingency.All kinds of things in society today are conspiring to emphasize this contingency of life. somebody's little boy is playing on the in front of the house, and suddenly he is knocked out by an automobile. So mother never gets him back. So thousands and one instances of such contingency of life are there today. The more you reflect about it, the more the sense of insecurity eats into the vital of our nature. Now, in various forms, this sense of contingency is invading the minds of people. In our younger generation today, you know, the problem of existence has appeared in various forms. So I should, let me give you an idea. In one form in which the younger generation is experiencing a threat to their existence is the fact that they feel that they are in great danger of losing their individuality, a threat from society, the whole social structure, economico-political structure, has assumed such frightening proportions that young people feel that they are just going to be reduced to mere numbers. They go to college, they are numbers there. They just go to school, they are just anonymous units of a body politic. So they are in great danger of being swallowed up in that vast, anonymous mass of the social structure. So what they are going to do? Threatened in that way, which is a threat to the very vital essence of their being, individuality, they sometimes, you know, make all kinds of desperate efforts to counteract. Naturally, many of these efforts are not effective, nor very wise. But nonetheless, in desperation, they make these efforts to counteract this threat to their existence. For example, one effort they make is that there are lots of, you know, kids, as you know, as you observe, they adopt very eccentric behavior, dress up in a very eccentric manner, very loud in the color combination of their costume, maybe very wild in their hairdo, so trying to assert their individuality in that way, in all kinds of oddities and eccentricities of behavior and self-projection. Trying to project their image, image is the word today. Trying to project their image in such eccentric manner. So that is their way of counteracting, you know, their conception of existing. Another young, immature conception of existing is a rebellious attitude, a fighting attitude. When they look around, they find that everything is so big today. Big organizations, big corporations, big business firms, gigantic, colossal. So surrounded by all these big structures, colossal giants, every day they are made to feel they are insignificant, they are nothing. So what is the chance of existing as individuals? There is a sense of personal inadequacy. So the one thing they can think of is to wear a very rough and tough exterior. They want to be tough guys, you know, always in a fighting mood, aggressive, because they feel that's the one way of existing. But behind that rough and tough exterior, there is great fear inside. There is a great sense of inadequacy, insufficiency, a feeling of nothingness corroding into the soul day by day. Let me tell you a story. You know, two friends, let me call them Ram and Sham. You know, they are working in a building on the third story, painting. Suddenly, due to a slip on the ladder, one of them fell down from the third story and was badly hurt. So the other one, you know, Ram, he also went down and he asks him, his fellow, "Say, are you dead?" He says, "So I am." Then he says, "You know, you are such a big liar, I don't know whether to believe you or not." So he tries to lift his head in order to give him a punch in the nose. So he makes a desperate effort to lift his head, but he just can't drop. So you see, that shows I am dead. Otherwise you could not have got away with that remark. Now these are some of the, you know, young conceptions of existence. One is this rough, tough exterior, this fighting mood. Another is trying to be exceptional, something very out of the way, you know, peculiar. Or maybe to do something, to produce something new, very good, regardless of the fact whether that new production is valuable or not, is good or bad, you see. So that's the sacrifice of the sense of value. And that is a craze for novelty. Just something new, something different. Craze for novelty. So this is another very noteworthy feature. A desperate way, young, immature way of trying to exist. Doing something, creating something, just new, regardless of value consciousness. Some of that you find expressed in, you know, many very peculiar modern art creation. So one time there was a, you know, art exhibit, and specially at the window was displayed a very peculiar kind of painting. You look at it, you don't make any sense. It seems to be just an expression of inner chaos. But then many people, you know, collected there to see, to watch that painting. Everybody was, you know, reacting in his own way. So one young lady made a very nice remark. She said, "Well, there is one good thing about modern art, and that is everybody gets a chance." So it doesn't matter whether you are producing something aesthetically valuable. You just produce something, something new. So with this introduction, I am now going to discuss this problem of existence from the spiritual standpoint. You know, from the spiritual standpoint, the problem of existence is the problem of self-development. Constructive development of the dynamic potentialities of your nature, the latent possibilities, the hidden talent of your nature. And every individual, thank God, has some potentialities of, oh, some assets of his personality. However, his failures may be, his shortcomings may be, everybody has some positive potentialities or talent also. So from the spiritual standpoint, herein lies the crux of the problem of existence. Optimum development, constructive fulfillment of the latent possibilities of one's nature and application of the developed talent of the unfolded energy, ability in the service of man and God, in the service of mankind on the one hand, and toward the fulfillment of the divine will in life and society on the other hand. And that is the central problem of existence from the spiritual standpoint. Now, in order to develop some of the ideas and views in this connection, I would like to take the help of an illustration, and I shall remind you of a very ancient story on the basis of which I am going to tell you about some of the ideas of this existentialist problem. You know, it is because of the fact that the problem of existence has come so much to the front today that the existentialist movement of philosophy is spreading and is gaining influence very much. But there are all kinds of existentialist ideas, not all of which are very good, but all kinds of existentialist ideas are there. So I shall tell you about some of these on the basis of that story. I think some of you know of this. I have said this, told you that before. The story of the boatman and the scholar. You know, one time a very erudite scholar was crossing a river in a small boat. As he got into that boat, he struck up a conversation with the boatman. He asked the boatman, say, do you remember the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? He said, no, I don't remember at all. Oh, long ago somebody read to me some passages from the Bhagavad Gita. I don't know which is 18th and which is 17th. Then he said, have you read the Katha Upanishad? He said, oh, no, I have never gone to any university or college, I don't know. But still he was repeating, you know, asking questions like that. Have you read this? Do you remember that? And so on and so forth. So the boatman hung his head in shame. He says that I have never been to university, I don't know. After a while, when the boat was about in the middle of the stream, the sky was overcast with clouds, and the boatman saw that storm was coming. The boat was small, old, and capsized. So now it is the turn of the boatman to ask a little question. Turning to the scholar, he says, do you know how to swim? He says, no, I don't. Then he said, well, with all your erudition then, who is going to save your life? You are in great danger of dying if the boat is capsized. So that's it. You know, that expresses very nicely the problem of existence. It is not merely a question of scholarship, not a question of erudition, not a question of book learning. It is a question of going through life, walking with your two strong feet, standing on your own ground, meeting the challenge of life with your own inner strength. So we may say that art of existing is the art of swimming in the stream of life. Ability to cross the river of life and to recross if necessary. That is the art of life. So just keep this story before your mind, and I shall now have a chance to develop some of the existentialist views about this matter. You know, there are some people who are just afraid of even getting into the river. Whether in a boat or swimming, you see, they are just afraid. So they just sit on the, you know, side of the river, on the bank of the river, you see. And they look into the river and contemplate the dangers and difficulties which are there in the act of crossing. Never get to the point of getting down. So they are what we may call the mentally disturbed, psychological also neurotic, afraid of living their life, afraid of facing the challenge, and being frightened with the dangers and difficulties which beset life. Every now and then they think of going back instead of moving forward. You see, going back, away from these dangers which are there in the stream of life. So that represents one situation, one time, which, as we all can understand, is not a very healthy attitude to life. We have to move forward. Life is growth. Life is evolution. Life is constructive development. Life is meaningful self-unfoldment. Then, secondly, there are some people who want to cross the river in a big hurry. Just somehow, whether upon the shoulders of somebody else or in some quick means of transportation. They want to cross in a big hurry, without looking right and left. And once they succeed in going to the other shore, they think that's it. Never think of coming back again. The problem of swimming does not arise at all. So that is the second attitude. That is the second possible attitude. In existentialist language, these are the people who don't want to participate in life. They don't want to participate in the being of the world. They don't want to get away somehow. Sooner the better. They are in a hurry for the other world, without knowing what the other world might be. Oh, of course, they might have all kinds of, you know, rosy, fantastic, you know, pictures in their mind about the other world. But then that also is a violation of the meaning of life, of the purpose of existence. So here, that is a great message from some of the great philosophers of existentialism, philosophers like Karl Jaspers, Martin Heidegger, or religious existentialists like Paul Tillich or Martin Buber. So they all, we find, emphasize the need for participation in the world. Not an attempt to, you know, run away from it or cross the river in a hurry with some other means, fear or power. Some of those who want to do that, you know, they want to, you know, cross it and they never think of coming back again. In the field of religion, they are known as religious individualists or individual salvationists. They are eager, impetuously impatient of attaining their own salvation, and having attained it, not to think of anything else. So they are the individual salvation. In Sanskrit, that is a term for them. They are known in Sanskrit as Pratyeka Buddhist. That is to say, when a person who is striving for nirvana, from salvation. He is absolutely concerned with his own individual salvation. That is the implication of prasthyama. You know, I'm sure you are familiar with the word bodhisattva. Bodhisattva. So prasthyama Buddhist is the opposite of bodhisattva. Bodhisattva is the great idea, you know. Great idea, that is to say, a person who attains spiritual fulfillment for the good of humanity. As they experience God inside their own heart, they want to share that experience with others. Dedicate themselves to the good of humanity. That is bodhisattva. The opposite of that is prasthyama Buddhist. They are the ones who are in a big hurry and impatient for their own personal salvation and ready to be satisfied with that and that alone. So as against that, the great emphasis in the thoughts of the great existentialist philosophers, I mean the great ones, is the concept of participation, participating in life, because that is the plan of God. We have to go through life, experiencing different phases of life, grappling with the problems of life, because it is in that process that our character is built. That the deepest potentialities of our existence are unfolded. Thirdly, there are some who just don't want to, did not care to learn the art of swimming in the stream of life. Maybe because they are too intellectual, or maybe because they are too emotional, just as that story tells us. You see, that scholar was so intellectual, all the time so busy with his book learning, scholarly pursuits, that he had no chance of, not much interest in, getting acquainted with the ways of life and the ways of the world. You see, he is just like a child in that respect, absolutely innocent of the ways of the world. And consequently, he has no experience about the world. You see, how life is lived, right in the marketplace, you see, right in the heart of this world. No experience. So, no art of swimming, no ability to swim in the river. So, either because they are too intellectual, or because they are too much sentimental. So those who are too intellectual or too sentimental don't have an opportunity of getting acquainted with the ways of the world. They become impractical visionaries. In their own way, they may have some, attain some gains. You know, in every line there is some gain to be attained. Yes. But then they make a tremendous sacrifice. They miss a very valuable thing. That is knowledge about world and life. An ability to participate. You know, Albert Camus has discussed a good deal about this. He's a great existentialist writer, you know, obtained Nobel Prize for his writing. So he has emphasized very much this point, that there is great need for it. An active sense of oneness with humanity, participation in life, out of that sense of oneness and compassion. So in his own way, you know, in a this is a very paradoxical situation. He himself is a kind of atheist, you know. At least he calls himself an atheist. But in his own atheistic approach, he has tried to, you know, reflect and emphasize the concept of love in the teaching of Christ and the concept of compassion in the teaching of Buddha. So this is very paradoxical, as I say, that intellectual, in his philosophical belief, he is an atheist. You know, but on an atheistic basis, he has developed a very broad, warm-hearted, compassionate humanism, trying to show how we can practice this concept of love and compassion in our living and going through life. Then, that is the fourth point to mention. Among those who are in a big hurry, you know, to get away from here and to run away from the problems of life, especially there are some who always try to avoid human relations, social contacts, human relations. They are afraid of establishing a close, intimate, warm-hearted, you know, relationship with another human being. They are afraid perhaps that this close, warm relationship with some fellow being will deprive them of their own individuality, of their own privacy, of whatever they think of it. In that way, they lose the opportunity of realizing true God and the Spirit in life. Because the whole cosmic plan of God is such that it is through love and by cultivating human relations that we more and more develop the spiritual potentiality of our nature and get to know God. Now it is in view of this fact that the great poet Rabindranath Tagore says, Asankha Pandhana Mache Lobhiva Mukti Sha. You know, he has a very beautiful poem. The two lines of the poem are Vairagya Sadhane Mukti Se Amar Noy, Asankha Pandhana Mache Lobhiva Mukti Sha. Which means that it is not the purpose of my life to realize God by leaving society behind, by discarding human relations. I don't want that kind of freedom. He says that I want that kind of freedom which can be enjoyed in the midst of 1,001 human relations. If you call that bondage, I want freedom right in the heart of bondage. That was his message. So that is an existentialist message. Some of the modern existentialists, religious existentialists, have tried to develop them. Especially Martin Buber, I and Thou, that's it. I and Thou relationship. Dialogue between man and man, between I and Thou. It is through such active dialogue between soul and soul, spirit and spirit, that man can learn to realize the eternal Thou. So some, as you see, as opposed to this, there have been some in the past, ascetics, for example, individualists, who have avoided human relations, and they have thought that it is by avoiding human relations that they can realize God and fulfill themselves. But we have got to remember in this connection that the whole cosmic plan of God is such that man needs each other and must be advanced by loving each other. And in that scheme of human life, the whole divine purpose is, the purpose of woman is to help man in his self-development. The purpose of man is to help woman in self-development. And it is through mutual love and cooperation that they can eventually learn to love God in their life. So this is the central message of the philosophy of I-Thou relationship. Now some of these concepts that I have brought up in discussing, you know, this idea of participation in life and going through life in our spiritual adventure, in our search for God or for constructive self-fulfillment. Now this now can be summed up in a very beautiful concept which we find in Hindu philosophy, which is the concept of the integrated man. Now the ideal of the integrated man, absolutely integrated man. The idea of the Jivan Mukta, liberated soul. Do you know how the ideal of the Jivan Mukta, the liberated soul, has been visualized? In a very poetic manner, which is nice, I shall tell you. They say that a liberated person, a person who has mastered the art of existence, is the great swan, Hamsa, that is the Sanskrit word, swan. So you have the word Paramahamsa, you know, Sri Ramakrishna, the great saint, he was given the title Paramahamsa, the great swan. That's a spiritually liberated person. You know, every great saint, a true master, is, to use this Sanskrit expression, is a great swan. Meaning thereby that he is thoroughly integrated. Now what's the idea of swan? Idea is this. You know, the swan is adjusted in all the elements of nature, in all the media of existence. You put him on land, well, he can walk on the land. You put him in water, oh, he's perfectly at ease there, swimming in water. And then, if necessary, he can fly too. So it is a wonderful thing about this swan. He is adjusted on land, he is adjusted in water, he is adjusted in the air. Can walk on land, can fly in the sky, and can swim in river. In water. Adjusted in all these media or elements of nature. That's the concept of liberated soul, integrated person. Mastery of the art of existence. When we are thoroughly adjusted in all these spheres, we are adjusted in society, a liberated person who knows how to exist in this world is at peace with the whole world. He has established a harmonious relationship with the whole world. Wherever you take him, he is at peace. He does not feel a stranger there. You see, he is in harmony with his social environment. In every race, in every nation, in every part of the world. So he is adjusted in that way. Then he is adjusted psychologically. That is to say, adjusted to his own psyche. He is aware of his true, authentic self. He has realized his higher self. So he is adjusted psychologically. He is adjusted socially. Because he is at peace with the world, in every part of the world, in different types of people, he is perfectly adjusted. He is adjusted psychologically because he is aware of his own true self and has unfolded his potentiality, his hidden possibility. And finally, he is integrated with or adjusted to the transcendental order of truth. God, infinite, absolute, by whatever name you call it. He is integrated with the infinite and the eternal dimension of existence, with the absolute spirit. So that's the master of the art of existence. A person who is adjusted or integrated in all the spheres, in all the media of life. Finally, I shall tell you, just by way of summing up my discussion, what are the main things that are needed for the mastery of the art of existing in order to be adjusted in that way, in society, within the self, and with regard to God? There are four things. One is, you know, it is important for every individual to become aware of his own hidden possibility, of his own talent, of the positive aspects of his personality. And to concentrate on that development. That's a must. That's an imperative for every individual. to develop himself, to rise to the height of his possibility by developing the inner talent of his own nature. That's one imperative. Unfoldment of inner talent. Another is acquaintance with the ways of the world. Instead of trying to run away, avoid people and society, getting to know this world in which we are born, ways of this world. So that acquaintance with the ways of the world. Third, understanding more and more the higher values of life. See, this is the value of culture, different cultural disciplines, morality, ethics, religion, philosophy. The one purpose of them all is this, just to help us in understanding more and more the higher values of existence, to appreciate such great values of life as truth and beauty and freedom and justice and harmony, so on and so forth. And finally, awareness of the divine purpose of existence, establishing relationship to the infinite, to the absolute spirit, which is the goal of all spiritual practice. All spiritual practice in whatever form, whether prayer or meditation or love or devotion, all these practices aim at one goal, and that is integration with the infinite, knowledge of the infinite, out of which knowledge comes a clear understanding of the divine purpose of our own individual existence. So these are the four essential characteristics of the art of existence. If we remember these four points that I have just now said, we are on our way to master the art of living in harmony with the Supreme. Because the art of existing, let me put it in another way, is the art of integration with the self, with society, and with the Supreme. Self, society, and Supreme. Thank you. Let us now meditate for a couple of minutes.